can tell you the news.
We lock Diamond and Silk.
Mark Zuckerberg will end up, and it's going to be a face without the book.
Without the face.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Now they're chipping away at the normalization of pedophilia, and the left is embracing this type of behavior.
We welcome Dinesh D'Souza.
I know I ticked him off. In a certain sense, it's a giant up yours to Obama, and that's why the left is freaking out over it.
Jack Kennedy and LBJ, Clinton, and the double standard from the left.
Yeah, I love how the left does nothing but push the most bizarre practices down our throats and up our tailpipes.
It takes a real man to tackle the hot issues. But really not.
Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Welcome to the Michael Hart Show.
Hello, it is the 29th day of October 2019, and you're listening to the Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Broadcasting Network. This edition brought to you by our friends over at Liberty One Tech. That's Liberty, the number one tech.com for all of your cyber needs and tech support. Also, our friends over at The Land Report for more information. If you love land, go to landreport.com. That's simply landreport.com. Listen for the special offers that are sprinkled throughout this broadcast to get a discount on your annual subscription. And of course, the Unknown America Project. You can learn more about the project by simply going over to theunknownamerica.com. That's theunknownamerica.com. This is the Trump and the Diplomacy of Deception edition of the program. Did President Trump violate the Constitution in his clandestine move to oust ISIS leadership in Syria without first notifying leaders of the Democrat Party? Although that debate will likely rage on for years to come, as it has, in this episode, we take a look at the constitutional responsibility, as well as the the actions of war without full congressional knowledge or approval. Did Trump step outside his authority in Syria? We break it down. Plus, all the hot news of the day, this day in history, and your calls, all brought to you again by the Unknown America Project. And this has been something which has been debated for decades, if not centuries, in this country, and that is congressional acts of war or any type of military action. So we're going to take a look at this from a historical perspective and see what the rules have to say directly from the House of Representatives, as we will be quoting the House.gov website to give you a little bit of insight as to all of the gnashing of teeth as it relates to ISIS and Trump's, his policies in the Middle East. But it would look like he really pulled a fast one on the Democrat leadership, which has them in a tailspin, and it's got pretty much everybody screaming foul in Washington, D.C. So we're going to take kind of a historical look at this, because the premise of this program, the premise of our public presentations, our speeches, talks, and whatever we do in terms of the YouTube channel, tries to take a view of what's going on in this nation from the perspective and through the prism of history, because there's a lot of history in the past, and quite frankly, if you're not up to speed on it, then you are going to be a victim of today's modern news media, which is one of the reasons we have recently introduced a brand new talk that we're offering to high schools, churches, universities, and corporate events as well, called Call 911, We Have a Fatality at the Intersection of Politics and Media, because the press is spinning out of control, and it would look as though that not only did Donald Trump pull a fast one on the Democrats, but it also raises the issue of why and what kind of a potential national security issue that poses for the United States of America when the President of the United States cannot telegraph his intentions or his movements, at least in a military sense, to the House of Representatives, which is charged with declarations of war. But first, this day in history, because it was on this date in 1901, the guy by the name of Leon Zogoff, the assassin of U.S. President William McKinley, is executed by electrocution. Also, on this date in 1921, the second trial of Sacco and Vanzetti in Boston. This was actually a spy case. Also, 1921, Harvard University football team loses to Center College, ending a 25-game winning streak. This is considered one of the biggest upsets in college football. Of course, this particular entry in history was, well, before Kansas State and Oklahoma made the turn. But nonetheless, 1929, the New York Stock Exchange crashes in what will be called the Crash of 29 or Black Tuesday, ending the great bull market of the 1920s and the beginning of the Great Depression. Also on this particular day, we got to jump, well, quite a ways further up as we go to 1957. Israel's Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion and five of his ministers are injured when Moshe Dwek throws a grenade into Israel's Knesset. Also on this day in 1960, Louisville, Kentucky, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, wins his very first professional fight. And that's pretty much all that is, well, worth mentioning from an historical perspective that's anything even, well, remotely significant to what's going on in the country today. Phones, when the time is right, are 929-477-3761. That's 929-477-3761. There is, well, quite a bit of other news that we would need to blow through here as a second Democratic aide has been sentenced in the Kavanaugh doxing case. And the Democrats, again, prove their willingness to go outside of, well, I would say decorum, but it's really more a matter of the law to achieve their sometimes, oftentimes, frequent nefarious objectives. This is a second aide to Senator Maggie Hassan, who has been sentenced in a scheme to break into Hassan's office to obtain and publicly post the personal information of several Republican politicians amid contentious confirmations hearings, of course, for Brett Kavanaugh. The former aide, Samantha Davis, was sentenced to 2 years of supervised probation with 200 hours of community service with a suspended sentence of 180 days in prison. Now, one of the reasons I brought that story to light today is it goes to demonstrate some of the concerns the Trump administration might have as it relates to Syria and the Middle East. Then you got Kamala Harris. She's all up in arms, no pun intended, about the announcement from Donald Trump and, quite frankly, the way he phrased much of it. But looking at a very interesting piece from Front Page, according to conventional thinking, President Trump's decision to withdraw U.S. troops from northeast Syria opened the door to the resurgence of ISIS. And that's what we've heard from the mainstream media for the last week or so. Make no mistake, according to Senator Bob Menendez, President Trump ignores the national security threat posed by ISIS at our nation's peril. I would posit that much of the peril comes in the form of the potentiality, well, I'm malapropping again, of leaking information through White House channels that may very well be ingratiated to people within the House of Representatives. He is, of course, this is Menendez, the top-ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said last week how foolish Senator Menendez and his fellow critics look now after President Trump announced Sunday that a special operations raid, which he had approved and closely monitored, resulted in the cowardly death of al-Baghdadi, the leader of ISIS. Last night, the United States, this is a quote from the president, brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. That was in a statement from the White House describing the operation in detail. Al-Baghdadi is dead, and he was the founder of and the leader of ISIS, the most ruthless and violent terror organization in the world. The United States has been searching for Baghdadi for many years. This would have been after the release of this criminal by the Obama administration. So this raises a lot of questions that we're going to get into today, and your calls are also welcome if you want to chime in on this, about whether or not the president stepped out of his constitutional right to engage this particular terrorist. And of course, as is predictable as it can possibly be, the Democrats are wagging in the wind. But it raises the question, of who is really more at fault here, or who is the greater threat, or in the case of Menendez's comments, creates the greatest amount of peril for the United States based upon their actions and activities. It speaks an awful lot that a sitting president feels compelled to hide from legislative leadership his intentions or desires. So, with that said, does the president have the actual, well, does he have the authority to do what he did? And that is what many people have actually raised. And so what we do is we have gone out to the House of Representatives. This is the History, Art, and Archives section for the United States House of Representatives, and just kind of take a bit of a historical look at what the president did, his right to do so, et cetera, and perhaps give you a little bit of insights, interesting insights, on the president's role, any president's role and responsibility from the eyes of the perspective of the founding fathers of the United States. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the United States Constitution, the Congress shall have the power to declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules conquering captures on land and water, to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. It goes on to the declaration and provision of a navy, to make rules of the government and regulation of the land and naval forces, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union and suppress insurrections and repel invasions. Now, for those of you that might not be up to speed with letters of marque and reprisal, think, basically mercenaries. Back in the day, in the founding fathers' days, it was oftentimes easier for the United States simply to hire armies in other lands to do their battles for them. This is one of the reasons that Washington spoke to the idea of not getting involved in foreign incursions. It wasn't necessarily a position of isolationism, but it spoke to Washington as well as the other founders. It spoke to their concerns about being able to retool and resupply navies and armies that were far afield. And the Constitution speaks to the right of letters of marque and reprisal. But it's interesting to know that, like many powers articulated in the Constitution, Congress's authority to declare war was revolutionary in its design and a clear break from the past when a handful of European monarchs controlled the continent's affairs. Now, this is, and by the way, I am reading directly from the website for the House of Representatives. The framers of the Constitution, reluctant to concentrate too much influence in the hands of too few, denied the office of the president the authority to go to war unilaterally. If America was going to survive as a republic, they reasoned, declarations of war required careful debate in open forums among the public's representatives. The provision of the Constitution giving war-making powers to Congress was dictated by the following reasons. As a young first-term congressman named Abraham Lincoln wrote in 1848, during the war with Mexico, kings had always been involving and impoverishing their people in wars, pretending generally, if not always, that the good of the people was the object. This, our constitutional convention, understood the most oppressive of the kingly oppressions, and they resolved to so frame the Constitution that no one man should hold the power of bringing this oppression upon us. However, and this is where it gets dicey as it relates to Syria, of the Constitution's many checks and balances, few have become as controversial as a consequential as the country's war powers. Article 1 is clear in giving Congress the power to declare war and to federalize state militias. However, Article 2, Section 2, names the president as commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militias of the several states when called into service for the United States. Although the framers ensured that a civilian would lead Americans' armed forces, constitutional scholars have debated for years whether the position of commander-in-chief actually gives the president the authority to open hostilities, or whether it was merely a title the founders conferred on the chief magistrate. Now, several things are worth noting here. That in the colonial days, the constitutional days, if you will, around the time of the conventions and the drafting, the founding fathers saw an enormous amount of value in the leader of the armed forces for the United States to not be a member of the military. Presumably, this would be to protect the articles, as well as to allow the president, kind of like an executive order, to implement warlike actions or police actions or Syria-like actions without congressional approval, out of expediency and the immediate sense of peril for a situation. Now, scholars have, again, debated this for years. I mean, heck, folks, we're still debating the Bible. But at the end of the day, you have scholars that are still debating whether or not the president has the power to do what he did. But it's in the gray area. It's in the vague areas that have allowed presidents time in and time again to conduct such actions and such raids. And yes, we saw it under Barack Obama as well. When combined, this according to the House of Representatives, when combined with the president's implied privilege to make war, the question of whether or not the commander-in-chief carries additional powers becomes an issue of vast constitutional consequence, something that has plagued the federal system and its scholars over a period of time. While a close reading of the convention debates suggests the framers intended to limit the president to defensive actions, a number of administrations, especially after World War II, have broadly interpreted the notion of a defensive war and have committed U.S. forces without congressional authority, only to ask for it later if they ask for it at all. One recent study has described the Constitution's language on initiating hostilities as ambiguous, and more than one scholar has described the executive war power as, quote, vague. In summarizing the relationship between 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and Capitol Hill, another political scientist has written recently that the Constitution is a paradoxical mix of clearly defined war powers for Congress and implied prerogatives for the president, which over the years has created what he called an uneasy balance between the branches. And boom, that's exactly what you've seen over Syria in the last several days. So when you hear people scream about, and I'm talking about the Democrats, about the constitutionality of Trump's actions, yes, it is, it's true. It is not clearly stated that he has this authority, but it's also not clearly stated that he does not. This is simply a matter of the president of the United States acting in a manner in which he felt was best for the country. If you want to liken it, and I'm going to, but if you want to liken it to a football game, pick your favorite college team. And let's say that it's very late in the fourth quarter. They have a choice to make, go for two and get the win, and maybe even a long two at that, or kick the field goal and tie the game and go into overtime. The head coach chooses to kick the ball. However, the offensive coordinator, in this example, not the same guy as the coach, decides to go for two. It's a major risk. As the team is lining up, everybody is imperiled. Everybody's freaking out. What an idiotic move to go for two in this situation. And then the two-point conversion is successful, and suddenly this man is looked upon as though he is a brilliant football strategist and a hero. However, people on the sidelines that would have preferred the field goal and take the risk of overtime continually bust on him for a decision that could have gone wrong. However, the people in the stands are now regarding this ballsy decision to have been one of absolute brilliance. And that's more or less what we're seeing in this country over the course of the last 72 hours or so. Trump goes out on a limb, makes the call, he converts the score, wins the game. The sidelines are freaking out, but the stands are jumping for joy. So it also speaks to the fact that this president does not feel that he has the safety and security of having these discussions because of a couple of different matters. Number one, could it be used against him in real time, thus telegraphing to our enemies our intent, or even in a worse sense, the belief that the mission is secure, however it gets leaked, and now we're looking at an Iranian rescue mission vis-a-vis Jimmy Carter. Now, that was not a leaked mission, but it was one that certainly ended in abject disaster. So it's interesting to note that when you have a House of Representatives that has demonstrated over the course of the last 2 or 3 years its disdain for the military in some circles and certainly law enforcement in others, as it is called out law enforcement time and time again, that it would seem as though the Trump administration was literally fearful of its own House of Representatives possibly leaking or at least aborting his attempts to get this guy and send a very clear message to Syria. Additionally, there is also now the debate over whether or not, because the whole thing with, and he, by the way, these weren't ground troops that he pulled out. These were advisors, 50 of them. And, but of course, according to Menendez, that's going to cast the entire nation into a state of peril. But we have to, you know, make the observation that was Trump pulling them out to protect them from any potential backlash after the actual killing of Baghdadi was successful, or even unsuccessful for that matter, or was it simply a matter of laying cover for his true intent? Now, that's going to be open for debate for some period of time. But if he's laying cover in pulling out these advisors to confuse the Syrians, frankly, confuse everybody, as well as his own House of Representatives and anybody else in the Middle East, if that was in fact the intent, it is beyond brilliant. It's scary brilliant in how projecting that we are running to our enemies when in fact we turn around and hit them. It's back to football. It's almost like a reverse or a double reverse. And so the president comes out victorious, and yet again, Democrat leadership has egg on its face. So what do we get out of this? We get Kamala Harris, who's whining and moaning and belly aching about the way the president actually made the announcement. She actually scolds the president over the announcement over the Baghdadi death, saying it was like he was commenting on a video game. She praised the U.S. military and the intelligence community for the raid that killed al-Baghdadi, but called out Trump for his extraordinary reaction to the mission. Speaking on NBC's Late Night with Seth Meyers, she argued that Trump's remarks after the raid proved, quote, he does not fully appreciate the importance of the job. Let's just stop right there for a second. I have, in the 12, 13 years that I've been doing this, and I've been broadcasting for closer to 20, but with a tilting, if you will, towards politics for the last 11 or 12. And I started broadcasting when Bush was president, all through the Obama administration, through the early days of the Trump administration. And you guys know that I'm an amateur historian. I don't have a degree in it, but I certainly consume it like nobody's business, which is why I love writing about it. And it is simply the truth that we cannot apply Western understanding to Middle Eastern war making. We simply cannot do it. It's a theocratical and theological view of the world that we simply do not share. Most people in the Islamic fighter class are not afraid of death. They welcome it in some circles. It's the whole 72 virgins thing, which we won't get into that today. There is an enormous amount of honor in that culture when you are martyred. These suicide bombers' families are often taken care of for life, and it is considered a position of valor and honor and martyrdom for the cause. There are very few things in terms of retribution in a war between the West and the Middle East. I'm not talking about Christians and Muslims. I'm not even talking about the West and Muslims. I'm talking about extremist Muslims. I realize what the Quran says. Don't make me pull out the Old Testament, because I will lay down on some of the capture or kill the infidels arguments. But we'll get into that another day, perhaps. They don't understand a lot. But one thing they do understand is crazy. I'm talking BS, bat S crazy. Whether or not it's mocked, it's feigned, or it's legitimate. We saw this in the Iranian hostage crisis. Jimmy Carter and his failed plot to remove the hostages caused a lot of military damage and loss of life. Then we have the Hollywood actor Ronald Reagan with the swagger and the cowboy hat and the duster and the bush hog. They had no idea what was coming. Part of the release of the hostages at that time, because they saw the writing on the wall, was somewhat of a punch to Jimmy Carter, as well as fear of Ronald Reagan. If you recall, Reagan's successor, pardon me, George Bush, we'll call him Bush the First, used to refer to him as Saddam Hussein. And everybody called him out. It's Saddam. You're so stupid. You can't even pronounce the man. He did it intentionally, because Saddam means, well, it's a proper name. Saddam is somewhat of an insult, and he knew it. It's getting under people's skin, politically speaking, that frequently will cause them to act and or behave in a manner which is counterintuitive to their normal behavior. It's like if you're in a bar fight. You go and bow all up, that's fine. But you're going to get a lot more distance, and frankly, a lot more safety and security if you just act like a whack job. Whether that's flailing around on the floor, talking to yourself, or speaking in tongues. When somebody appears to be so off their rocker that they are deemed irrational, enemies take note and frequently take flight. So the comments from Trump, as schoolyardish as they seem, projects the idea to our enemies that he took some measure of joy in the killing of this man, and in somewhat of a psychopathic way, a presidential psychopathic way, might seek to repeat that particular feeling. It gets kind of complicated and deep, but yes, there is a method to the madness. And I also find it quite interesting about how many of the 2020s are screaming at the top of their lungs about the presidential appearance, or appearing to be presidential in a situation. I don't even really know what that means. And they've gotten their knickers all in a bunch about how the president was looking in the situation room. And they compared and contrasted to Obama with his bomber jacket on that he probably got on sale from TJ Maxx or something. But this is what has the Democrats bouncing around and flailing like their butts are on fire, because they can't figure this guy out. But more importantly, much, much, much more importantly, nor can our enemies. The Constitution provides for the war-making powers and protects them within the Congress. However, as we stated moments ago, Article 2 allows the president to act in a temporary and swift manner for the immediate safety and securing of the United States. The President of the United States appears to have done just that. And when you look at what we talked about last time we were together, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, and all the dots that we began to, and then this Copper Black fellow, all the dots we began to connect for this coup d'etat, this internal coup against the President of the United States, announcing up front that this raid was on the table, would have been asinine beyond belief. There never would have been a public announcement of it, but if he had telegraphed it to his in an election year to the very people that either want to unseat him or impeach him, would have been beyond asinine, considering that the vagaries contained in the United States Constitution afforded him the authority to do just that. Quick break, coming right back on the other side. We'll open the phone lines up at 929-477-3761. You're listening to the Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America broadcast. This is the Trump and Diplomacy of Deception edition of the program. Stick around. We're coming right back. Heart of America and the Michael Hart Show is brought to you in part by the Unknown America Project. Unknown America, myths and little known oddities about the greatest nation on earth, explores many of the falsehoods and fallacies and revisions in American history that impact the beliefs and the thoughts of many people in this country today. So if you'd like to learn some of the most enduring myths that have been perpetrated on the American public for the last 100 plus years in this country, go check out the book at heartofamerica.net. That's heartofamerica.net. And pick up a copy of Unknown America. It comes out to you absolutely no shipping. It'll be autographed, and we'll even send you a copy of the United States Constitution is our way of saying thanks. So support the Unknown America Project by simply going to theunknownamerica.com, and thank you for your support.
Don't you hate it when your computer is running slow? Did you know that could be a sign of viruses, spyware, or Trojan horses giving hackers access to your private data? Do not let your identity be stolen. Do not let your private documents be made public. Do not let a hacker hold your family photos hostage. Do let the industry-leading security experts at Liberty One Tech ensure that your computer and network are safe. Liberty One Tech will also help secure your online accounts to keep hackers out and make sure you never lose access. It's all free when you join the Talk Text Plus service. With Talk Text Plus, you have unlimited VIP access to expert technology help 7 days a week so that you can always make the right click. Sign up today and get the free security checkup at libertyonetech.com. That's Liberty, the number one, tech.com.
The Land Report, the magazine for the American landowner, is a proud supporter of the Michael Hart Show. Currently, they're offering an exclusive subscription price for listeners of the Michael Hart Show. So click on the subscribe button on landreport.com and enter the code HARTSHOW at checkout and receive a one-year discount on America's number one land magazine. You'll get a full year of the Land Report, which normally goes for $59, for only $15. That's a 75% savings off the cover price. Again, that's promo code HARTSHOW at checkout of thelandreport.com, and make sure to check out The Land Report on Facebook if you love land.
And Michael Hart is the man of this house.
We'll be right back.
Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Broadcasting Network, talking a bit about the fallout from the Middle East and Syria and the president's position that it was his constitutional right to go in and take them out, do your stuff, kind of, I don't know, Jeff Goldblum, Independence Day, no, not so much. Okay, let's get out to the phones, and we will talk to Clark. Hello, Clark, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Michael, and yourself?
I am fantastic.
Wow, so look at all the details that were considered and covered in this whole Syria pullout, Turkey, Russia, Baghdadi thing. I mean, you know, that's a tapestry, Michael. Every thread was, wasn't it?
Well, you know something else too, Clark, that hasn't really been brought up by a lot of people in the press is not just the message that it sends in Syria, but the message it just sent to China and Russia.
Oh, yeah. We are capable. And, you know, it's a shame Pence did not play it better with Wallace the other day on the whole why didn't the president inform the speaker. He just kind of hemmed and hawed around. He should have just flat out stated, you know, at this point, why should our president ever trust Pelosi, Schiff, Schumer, et cetera, at all with any kind of sensitive information? I mean, we've had a couple of missions that had to be scrubbed in recent history. And the New York Times has a history of leaking stuff counter to the United States all the way back to the Bay of Pigs, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Seemed like simple OPSEC to me, not letting them know about it. I don't know, really. You know, why would President Trump trust any of these people at this point in time? They got no regard for the best interests of the United States. And the Trump derangement syndrome in these people is so strong, they'll jump on any opportunity they get to where they can damage the president or deny him anything positive. And it doesn't matter how deleterious it is to the interests of the United States. I think they're going to try to damage our economy in order to affect the 2020 presidential race. It's probably time we just call these people out for what they are, and that's enemies of America, period. I mean, that's what they are, Michael. Ms. Barth has pointed out repeatedly, you don't try to fundamentally transform something that you love to begin with. And these people are counter to our interests. And I don't know, you know, start to say that, and the media is automatically, that's inflammatory. You're not being nice. Why should we be nice anymore? I don't understand.
Well, you know, I think it's beneficial to us to realize the perspective of the Democrats themselves, and I'm talking about the voters, because, you know, there's a lot of people that believe that the Democrats, the leadership, simply wants to destroy America as we know it. And I see it more along the lines of turning America into some kind of a dystopian type of a nation, you know, a dystopian country, so imperiled, so, you know, so economically unstable, so divisive and divisive that the Democrats in the leadership sense look as though they can rebuild America in their own image. And, you know, we're talking all the time about socialism and fascism and things like that. But I think that in order to really get through to the Democrat voters, we need for them to see not necessarily that they're trying to destroy America and bring it entirely down to its knees, but to cause enough contention and anarchy that the leadership can rebuild it into a utopian society where if they can sell the idea that it's currently on the path of dystopia, that they're going to have a real success there. It's just not working, at least not for enough people for it to be effective come November of next year. But the Democrats definitely do not have the United States' best interest at heart at this period of time, because I believe that they believe, kind of like going old Maisie Hirano on you, that most people don't understand how smart they really are. And it's so asinine to take that position. But, you know, when you really take a fundamental look at it, the leadership of the Dems, they have to prove to America that America is falling apart by precipitating that fall so they can come in and be the heroic rescuers of the future.
Well, let's look, Michael, for just a minute at the wonderful job they have done rebuilding America in the parts of it that they control. I swear, if I was running a national campaign, I would show footage of San Francisco, L.A., Chicago, Baltimore, Venezuela cities, Mexican
cities. Throw Denver
cities.
In there.
Yeah.
Throw Denver in there. I mean, it's all across the country.
Well, my question would be, look, people, if you can't see the language on the street signs, tell me what country we're in here. Is this in Venezuela or the United States? You know, what part of third world hellhole do people not understand? Is this where we want to go? I don't know. Gee, rolling blackouts for how long? Until I guess fire season's over, huh? Because they won't cut under power lines. At some point in time, if you have any intellectual honesty or any actual wokeness, you have to start to understand that these are not good things. You know, when medical care for everybody means you may or may not get an aspirin, whether or not they have one, but pretty much that's it, that's not a good thing. You know, we're going to come to the point where the doodle can go get better medical care than the Michael.
No, you're right.
Because when you take the doodle to the vet, they're going to say, we need to run this test, and this test, and they're going to go do it. They will not have to appear before some kind of panel to determine whether or not this case warrants these tests being run. I don't know. Anyway, it does fascinate me the way he just took every single little thread here and wove it in. And, you know, a lot of people, you're reading more into it than Zaire. I swear, Michael, the guy hits the lotto on a near weekly basis.
And you know what's interesting?
Yeah.
And you know how you can almost prove that statement is that every time the Democrats freak out, they only freak out on Trump's successes. So the louder they freak and the more they freak, the more they demonstrate that he's being successful. My concern is that too many of the low IQ voters out there simply don't see it for what it is, because the Democrats are trying to sell this narrative that we abandoned the Kurds when we did something quite the opposite. And you know something else which is interesting that's not getting reported? All of the oil fields and the refineries that were controlled by ISIS. Whose control are they in now? The Kurds.
Not ISIS. Yeah.
That's right. The Kurds have them. Boom.
Now, what can the Kurds turn around and do with that income?
Well, I don't know. Develop armies to fight off ISIS? Build cities, towns, support the United States.
Yeah, I don't know. If we had an honest media, who knows what could happen? And I begin to wonder, Michael, when indictments start to drop, if and when that ever happens. Here we are right at Halloween, and I swear, what's his name, Linus? Is he the one that had the blanket set out and waited on the great pumpkin? Yeah, well,
right.
I feel more and more like waiting on indictments. I just feel like every year I'm waiting on the great pumpkin and he doesn't show up. But anyway, you know, if those indictments start to happen, at some point in time, the complicitness of the media in this whole mess is going to become evident. And you got to wonder if they're going to keep riding this until the bitter end, when they have absolutely zero credibility. I don't know that any of them could ever be indicted on any of this. I think there has been criminal behavior there, but it's definitely unethical behavior. And in no way, shape, or form have they performed what they consider to be their sacred duty to keep the public informed. They've been part of a disinformation program. And I don't know. I do. I wonder, do they stay with this charade until the very end, or do they jump off the track?
All they've got for it. That's all they've got.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I got to move on to the next thing, and I'll keep listening, and you keep doing it.
Thanks, Clark. I appreciate the call.
All right, sir. Bye-bye.
For those of you that do not follow primarily college football, but I guess you can make an NFL comparison as well, or if you don't live in the southeastern United States in particular, you might not appreciate the dynastic, and I'm malapropping there, the dynastic personality of Alabama coach Nick Saban. There are a lot of people in this country that despise the man because of his successes. Interestingly enough, Saban frequently says in news conferences things that are as caustic as Trump says in some of his. And don't throw the, well, he's a football coach and Trump's the president argument at me, because that's not the point I'm making. I think sometimes when Saban talks about the media being rats, have you noticed how Saban, how in opposition to the press, he too is? Frequently men in great in positions, for that matter, women, men and women in powers of positions of power and success, frequently lambast the press because the press loves to do the dirty laundry thing. But in recent years, Saban's been under a lot of heat and pressure, not within the state, obviously, but within the conference hierarchy. Because Alabama, and I am an Auburn fan, but Alabama is without a doubt a dynasty. And it is going on to be the most prolific dynasty in all of NCAA history. And I know that Newt Rockne is rolling in his grave. But what's interesting to note is the personality similarities in some cases of these two, but the fact that there are so many people in this country that think that Saban needs to be reeled in. He's got an unfair advantage because he keeps winning and winning and winning. It's sometimes difficult for other teams to recruit, Auburn's defensive line notwithstanding. And I think that Trump is experiencing much of the same thing, because as his successes continue to mount, and like Saban, he pulls victory out of the jaws of defeat, because Alabama is a fourth quarter team, particularly if they get into a tight spot. A successful term for Donald Trump, complemented by an equally or possibly more successful second, would almost ensure the election of Mike Pence if he so chose to run. Yes, the Democrats fear Donald Trump, but more importantly, like Saban, they fear the dynasty that he is creating. There will come a time when Nick Saban will retire from football. I do not expect the University of Alabama to settle for anything less than the best coaching talent in America when that happens. But I believe, and there's always ebbs and flows, and Alabama will lose again, but the dynasty of Alabama over a certain period of time will most likely continue in football perpetuity, even without Saban present, because he has set the standard. Something similar is at work in D.C. The Democrats know full well that if Trump continues on this trajectory, he is undefeatable. And so would a Pence. That gives us 13 years of no Democrat in the White House. Moreover, back to Clark's call, if the media jumped on board and understood what Trump was doing, or understood the folly of resisting, and were supportive of the president and the Democrat House of Representatives in particular, assisting in the efforts to make great program and policy decisions for the American people. And this country thrived beyond our past thrivings, our past victories, and became a virtual utopian state to the degree that that's achievable. That is the Democrats' biggest fear. Why in the living hell would Auburn turn away a great defensive recruit so that Nick Saban could continue his dynasty? Ain't gonna happen. It's a matter of fighting tooth and nail at every turn for fear that a dynasty will continue in the case of the football analogy. Trump doesn't just represent Trump. He represents a future trajectory in this nation that could obliterate any chances or hope of the Democrat Party ever seizing the Oval Office again. Yes, they need to bring Donald Trump down, impeachment or whatever means they choose. But the only way to do that is to be as aggressive and as almost volatile as they have been, and the collateral damage of that action will be you. This nation, historically speaking, and I'm going to say Republican and Democrat presidents, have engaged in actions of a military sense where we have sent men and women into places of war that some could argue were necessary and or not. I'm not going to name wars. I don't want to get into the politics of it. But whether or not we're talking about the current conditions or previous actions, many, many, many men and too many women have perished on battlefields or nearby. Frequently for wars we have no business being in, defending people that should be prepared to defend themselves. I'm not suggesting that we should not lend aid, because at the end of the day, we're Americans. But sometimes that aid has been excessive with no real benefit to this nation. If we are willing to sacrifice our best, our brightest, and our future for the preservation of other nations, what in the world makes people think they wouldn't sacrifice your future right here at home? Big part of the military-industrial complex. That's an economic statement. That's an economic position. The industrial warlords, the contractors, etc., that enrich the pockets of politicians. What makes you think they wouldn't sacrifice your personal economics for their own growth, for their own power? That's what Donald Trump is a threat to. Donald Trump has proven his ability and willingness to go through them. He's proven his willingness and ability to go around them. 72 hours ago, he proved his willingness and ability to go behind them. And that is the biggest threat of all to this Democrat Party, because 72 hours ago, they learned they just lost control, not of the narrative, but of the way they think or interpret that they can manhandle this administration. If Trump chooses a pathway of being as stealth with all of his decisions as he just demonstrated his ability to do, this Democrat Party can kiss its ass and its future goodbye. And if you cannot understand the need to not just support this administration, hate Donald Trump if you want. How often, Christians, do we say, love the sinner, hate the sin? All right, let's apply that here. Just kind of in reverse. Hate him, you want to hate him, but vote for him. Because he's doing things that are going to benefit your future and standing in defiance of those that have no desire whatsoever to maintain your success and your trajectory in your family, your faith, your business, or whatever the case may be, if in fact they cannot capitalize upon it, regardless of what they say. Immigrants flowing across our southern border so they can vote. Lowering the voting age to 16. Are you kidding me? Personally, I think it should be raised to 21, unless you serve in battle or serve in the military. Donald Trump did what he had to do as it relates to Syria. The Kurds are better off for it. The country looks stronger because of it. Our enemies are awakened over it. Our military is emboldened by it. And there's a heightened sense of patriotism in this country like we really haven't seen since 2001. Just like with the football coach who decides to go rogue and go for the victory by going for two, unbeknownst to his head coach, and he comes out heroic and victorious. He demonstrates to every football foe that he will face in the future that he can go rogue and that he's unpredictable. And in the last possible moment, is ultimately a threat to their victories. That is the kind of wily, unpredictable administration that all of our enemies fear the most. In a world where we're trying to defeat ISIS and will undoubtedly get into skirmishes, whatever they look like, with the Russians and the Chinese, having an unpredictable administration and one that is willing to completely usurp the entire system to achieve his stated goals or goals that remain unmentioned, that is the biggest threat of all. It's not guns. It's not manpower. It's not numbers, it's not geography, and it's not topography. Fear in any sense of all, whether it's fear of a nation or fear of a dog, fear resides in the unknown. And when things are unknown or the outcome unassured, fear takes hold. Obstacles and enemies fall. And that's what's happened in the last 72 hours in this nation. Nobody saw it coming, but it sent a very, very clear message to the rest of the world that this is an administration you better not treat with, whether you're a Democrat leader or a despotic leader. And sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. But Donald Trump did something that very few presidents have ever done before. It's got the Democrats quaking in their boots because with his ability to cloak his actions and people not knowing what he's going to do next, he has struck fear in the hearts of our international enemies and our domestic ones. Yes, in fact, he engaged in the diplomacy of deception. And as far as this commentator is concerned, this country is better off for it.
Hola boy, oh my God.
Hola boy, BK boy.
This think it's credit, but it's debit. Hit that shorty once and I'll forget it. Big boss, you better recognize. Might go Rick Ross with the curly fries. Sipping Hennessy or Dirty Sprite. Doing 180 down the Tom Pies. She on her cell phone, I'm filling up her thighs. What you like, what you like, look. I just like what you like. Came up out the dark with this chain, give me the light. Shorty, give it.
I'll be back.